First, the writer Claire Allen is on a quest to find out more about her own mental health diagnosis in On the Borderline.
I'm in North London, standing outside the building that once housed the psychiatric day hospital I attended 20 years ago. It's all shut up now, been empty for years, but I can vividly remember arriving that first morning, worried I wasn't mad enough, terrified that I'd be turned away. As it turned out, my fears were groundless. Most of my time here was spent smoking and drinking tea. I later satirised the experience in my novel, Poppy Shakespeare. My health deteriorated rapidly. I started self-harming. Within months, I tried to kill myself. The doctors were racking their brains. I collected diagnoses like stamps. After more than a year, they gave up. The treatment wasn't working, they said, and I was discharged. But I didn't leave empty-handed. I had a new diagnosis. Borderline personality disorder. BPD is a common diagnosis. Around 2% of adults in the UK are thought to meet the criteria, and it accounts for 20% of admissions to mental health inpatient units. And yet we hear almost nothing about it. There's a very good reason for this. BPD is not something you shout about. It feels shameful, or it certainly did to me, as though there was something so fundamentally wrong at the core of who I was that my only hope was to keep quiet about it, steer clear of intimate relationships, and just hope nobody noticed. And that's what I did for many years. But I've had enough of hiding. I think it's time we talked about BPD. And in this programme, I'll be hearing from others with the diagnosis, their friends and family, as well as experts in the field. Like Professor John Gunderson, the father of BPD, who wrote the first paper defining the disorder in 1975. He talked to me from Harvard. What characteristics would you look for in somebody before you gave them this diagnosis?
The most discriminating characteristics have to do with their interpersonal relationships, which in the standard criteria include intense, unstable relationships marked by shifts from idealization to devaluation. And the other criterion is persistent abandonment fears. The behavioral specialty is self-harm.
It describes individuals who tend to see things in extremes of black and white, right or wrong, good or bad, all or none.
Dr. Gerald Kreisman, another psychiatrist and author of I Hate You, Don't Leave Me, one of the first guides to BPD.
These people tend to be very impulsive in self-destructive kinds of ways and also tend to have very reactionary and extreme responses to different situations. These are people who love beyond measure on Monday, those they will come to revile without reason on Tuesday.
Ouch. Goodness knows what happens on Wednesday. But it seems that defining what BPD is far from straightforward. Even the name has been the subject of controversy. Peter Fonagy is Professor of Psychoanalysis at University College London.
My feeling is that there are only three things wrong with the term. One, it's nothing to do with personality, so that's a misnomer. It's not borderline, because it's not a border of anything. And I am very dubious about the notion of disorder as well. But other than that, it's fine.
Others don't believe it's a useful diagnosis at all. Peter Tyra, Professor of Community Psychiatry at Imperial College.
My view has been for years that is not a very good diagnosis, because it covers so many things and doesn't hang together as a diagnosis in the same way that other conditions do.
So how did BPD become a diagnosis in the first place?
It was developed from, first of all, a well-known German psychiatrist, Kurt Schneider, who described a series of personality types in 1923, and one of them was the emotionally unstable group. And then there was a big study in America where they diagnosed something called pseudoneurotic schizophrenia, which were people who look as though they had symptoms of psychosis, but when you went into it. They didn't have symptoms of psychosis, and they didn't really have symptoms of standard neurosis, as it was described then, anxiety and depression and so on. This sort of morphed into borderline personality disorder in 1975 when John Gunderson first properly described it, but it was never identified as a sort of de novo, as it were, out of the blue. It was when this didn't make sense, that didn't make sense, let's put it in this. This is the borderline between neurosis and psychosis, the borderline between mental illness and personality. And so that's how it got its name of borderline personality disorder.
John Gunderson again, father of the diagnosis.
When I was a resident, there was a term called borderline personality organization that was sort of around but wasn't really used very much. It was applied, if it was applied at all, to a group of patients who were the most difficult for my fellow residents and myself. And when I became a chief resident, I started to collect a description of those patients. They didn't fit into any of the existing categories. And that was the start of it.
So who are these difficult patients? I mean, apart from me.
I want to be loved by you, just you, nobody else but you. I want to be loved by you alone. Boop-boop-be-doo.
Marilyn Monroe died before BPD was invented, but apparently she had it. It's also been linked to Sylvia Plath, the Princess of Wales, and even Adolf Hitler. The character of Alex Forrest, played by Glenn Close in the film Fatal Attraction, is apparently such a classic example of BPD that Dr. Kreisman devotes 2 pages of his book to her. And of course, it was Fatal Attraction that gave us the term bunny boiler. No wonder people with BPD tend not to talk about it. Thankfully, some people are prepared to.
Oh, it's your birthday.
Oh, is that my birthday?
Yeah.
Oh,
oh God, look.
It's my sister's triathlon.
Oh. Amy White was diagnosed with BPD several years ago. I went to her flat to meet her, together with her best friend, Rachel Whitehead.
Personality is almost like who you are. It's the kind of, you know, your sense of self, you know, and if that's disordered. I think I've just felt really shameful and quite kind of more negative about myself, like, God, there's something really wrong with me.
And it's not just people with the diagnosis who feel this way. Dr. Lucy Johnston is a consultant clinical psychologist in Bristol.
I think a personality disorder is, of all the labels, perhaps the most potentially damaging. Not only is it no more valid than any of the other labels, schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and so on, but I think it carries the additional message that you are bad. You're bad as well as mad, if you like.
But on the other hand, receiving the diagnosis can open the door to treatment. Many people with BPD have histories of trauma and abuse, and some find it validating to have their very real distress recognised and labelled. Merinda Epstein is a mental health activist in Australia who has the BPD diagnosis.
I've had people say to me, the worst diagnosis I've ever had is there's nothing wrong with you diagnosis, nothing wrong with you syndrome. That's been said to me lots of times.
Many people find the BPD diagnosis helpful. Randy Kreger is the author of several books aimed at family members, including Stop Walking on Eggshells, an international bestseller. Randy has found that friends and family are hungry for information.
People just glommered onto me, you know, just like I was made of honey and there was a bunch of bees. And people just kept on giving me, this is what I want to know. This is what I'm going through. Help me, help me, help me. I mean, my book has been transferred into Czechoslovakian, I mean, Serbian, some places I never even knew existed. Well, I mean, I certainly didn't think that my book would ever be translated into 2 different types of Chinese.
So how is BPD diagnosed? There are 2 main diagnostic manuals psychiatrists use in deciding who's got what. The International Classification of Diseases, or ICD, which is published by the World Health Organization, and a Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM, which is basically an American version of the psychiatric bit. Borderline personality disorder describes a cluster of symptoms, and to get the diagnosis, you must satisfy 3 out of 5 criteria, or 5 out of 8, depending on the manual. Both place identity disturbance, unstable mood, and self-harm on the list. I can certainly relate to some of these, and so can Amy White. When I first broke down, which was some years before I was given the diagnosis, the strongest feeling I had was that I didn't exist. I didn't have a self. There was nothing there. And to me, I suppose lots of the different aspects ring true, but that one has been very dominant right from the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think the so my impulse was to kind of resist the diagnosis and, you know, well, that's not me. But when I read it written down and you have to kind of meet 5 of those things, like all of those ring true to me, definitely, and particularly the sort of insecure sense of self. So you're really dependent on other people's perceptions of you.
Baby, you understand me now.
Personality is an elusive concept. It's hard to imagine any label that could adequately capture an individual.
When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord.
But is there scientific evidence to back up this complex diagnosis? One of the most recent developments in BPD research is trying to find out what's actually happening inside people's brains. So I've come to Cambridge to talk to one of the leading psychiatrists researching this field.
My name is Robert Dodash, and I'm an academic clinical lecturer at Cambridge University. My interest is in emotion research, so I do research on borderline personality disorder and depression.
Dr. Dodash showed me diagrams.
Okay, so this is an image from a functional magnetic resonance imaging experiment. So this
He's looking for areas of the brain which may be different in those with BPD, such as the amygdala, which could become overactive.
When I see patients with severe symptoms who suffer a lot, I don't have any doubt in my mind that this is not normal. This doesn't look like normal emotional functioning to me. And when you look at studies focusing on the more severe end, you see that people have found some morphological changes in the brain or functional changes in the brain. So it seems that these people suffer from some sort of disorder, some sort of illness.
So if there's a biological basis to BPD, does that mean I was born with it? The old nature-nurture question is an area as hotly debated as every other aspect of BPD. Here's Professor Fonagy.
I'm a developmental psychopathologist, whatever that is. Basically, what I believe is that there is a sequence of events, of interplay between constitution and what the environment puts in the person's life that sends a person down increasingly at a path that is less and less compatible with being in the mainstream of human society. The question to me is, why are some people genetically predisposed to react more to the same kind of environment than others?
But clinical psychologist Lucy Johnston questions this whole way of thinking about mental health.
The prevailing way of understanding what we would probably call mental distress is along a medical model. We assume these are illnesses, which means they have mainly biological causes, although other things may contribute. But there's no evidence that psychiatric breakdown is best understood as an illness with perhaps genetic or biochemical causes.
Here's another question. Why are women 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with BPD than men? I asked John Gunderson and Gerald Kreisman.
I'm amongst those people who actually wrote the textbooks saying that this was a disorder which was predominantly found in females at the rate you suggest of 3 to 1. But then epidemiological studies were done on community populations rather than clinical populations, they showed that in the community, 50% of the people who meet criteria for this disorder are male. Now, what that means, I think, is that the preponderance of females in clinical populations has more to do with their being help-seeking, and they're being less likely to move into substance abuse and forensic settings.
There is a bias that comes from the diagnostician. When anger and manipulation and impulsivity is seen in a man, it's more often attributed to psychopathy, an antisocial personality, whereas in women it's more likely to be seen as a borderline personality.
So you're more likely to get the diagnosis if you're a woman. Where you live in the world also makes a difference. According to Peter Fonagy, less cohesive societies foster BPD.
The prevalence of borderline personality disorder across countries corresponds quite closely to the discrepancy between the richest and poorest 20%. The bigger the discrepancy, the higher the prevalence. So in Norway, the prevalence is very low. In the United States, the prevalence is much higher.
John Gunderson also points to the low incidence in Norway and Japan, though for different reasons.
In Japan, they say it's because the society is so controlled and the impulsive behaviors are less apt to occur. On the other hand, they have a high incidence of suicide. Norway, I'm heavily Norwegian myself, my friends and relatives say it's because we drink too much.
Oh, so drinking's good for borderline personality disorder?
No, it just masks it.
Oh, that's good to know. Straight from the doctor's mouth.
I'm not encouraging it, and that was meant to be humorous.
Hi, and welcome to Norwegian. Press 0 for English version.
Sorry, where was I? When I was diagnosed, BPD was still relatively new. There wasn't much in the way of treatment. In fact, my diagnosis was handed to me as an explanation as to why my treatment hadn't worked. There was a huge amount of stigma attached to BPD, even perhaps especially amongst mental health professionals. Professor Gunderson agrees.
People with this disorder came into treatments and then had very negative reactions to the treatment. And it was said that these are untreatable patients or treatment-rejecting patients. They said the problem was in the patients, and the problem really was in the treatments we were providing. They actually made people worse.
I have to say that absolutely rings true for me.
So they'd run away from treatment, and we'd say, well, they're very difficult patients, rather than saying that we didn't know enough to treat them properly. And it added enormously to this persisting stigma.
So what treatments are available now? There are a number of medications commonly prescribed, including mood stabilizers and antidepressants. But there is, at present, no specific drug for BPD. In terms of talking therapy, the best known is dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT, a highly structured approach involving skills training and supportive therapy. Another newer approach, mentalization behavior therapy, has been co-developed by Professor Fonagy.
One of the key principles of our approach is that as a therapist, I have to recognize that your mind is opaque to me. What I have to approach you with is a sense of curiosity and a genuine wish to find out what's going on in your mind. What is it that this happened? And then what did you think? And goodness, you thought that. Why did you think that?
I be your mirror, reflect what you are, in case you don't know. I be the wind, the rain and the sunset, the light on your door.
Amy White had 18 months of intensive mentalization therapy and feels that it helped her enormously.
I think it's just understanding a bit more what's going on and not kind of leap into assumptions. And so for me, sometimes I'm always looking out for signs of rejection or signs of someone not liking me or not wanting to be there or not being enough for someone. And it's kind of, well, is that true? Like, let's break that down and look at that. And so it's quite a lot of exploration.
But the problem is, you don't just need to treat the person. You have to tackle the stigma. The mental health campaigner, Marinda Epstein.
I got my records under Freedom of Information, and the language that changes after your diagnosis gets changed to borderline is stunning. It is mind-blowing. Language, what do we use to think with? That's all we've got. Oh, two of the words in the world I can't stand are just and only. She is just pretending. She is only, you know, it was full of that stuff. And then, of course, you've got the attention-seeking, the manipulation.
Professor Graham Thornycroft is the author of Shunned, about discrimination in mental health.
There's actually been very little research about people with borderline or any personality disorders and stigma. What there is suggests that people, in fact, get the worst of both worlds. Already, by having any type of mental condition, there'll be a whole series of disadvantages, for example, in getting to work or forming partnerships, relationships, because you are seen to be a less worthy individual. Now, within that are the special problems of people with personality disorder, because when they do go for help, quite often their experience is one of rejection and blame, not compassion and assistance.
Just a particular day, I just felt really, really desperate, really, definitely sort of suicidal.
Amy explains what happened when she went to a crisis centre for help.
I waited for about an hour and a half and I was in floods of tears, finally saw someone, and it was just the lack of empathy was awful. So I was really, really upset. And he just kept saying to me, no, I can't hear you. You need to speak up. I can't hear you. And, you know, obviously because I was really crying, I couldn't explain myself very well. He just didn't offer any support or any kind of options. I was just sort of asked to leave, like, by the end. So he said, well, you know, what we'll do, we'll just monitor it from here. So I just left. And then eventually I called Rach and she came to pick me up in a taxi and I went to her house and she sort of looked after me, really.
I was really, really shocked at how terrible mental health services are. I was very naive and they pretty much just let her walk back onto the street. And I kind of thought, surely the most ill people would get the best treatment. But then you see some of these people that work in the services at the kind of lower levels and just how awful their training must be. The things they've said to Amy, the way they've treated her in A&E as well. I see, you know, nurses like rolling their eyes and... Yeah, I've been really shocked.
A paradox. You need the label to get help, but the label itself can be an obstacle. Marinda Epstein describes how some mental health consumers, the term she prefers, feel driven to extreme behaviour in order to access services.
I heard a consumer telling people not long ago, it's no use talking about suicide anymore, you should be talking about homicide if you want a service. It's just
it's
terrible.
Terrifying. I have to say, I've seen that myself. I've heard.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. What happens? It's like a cyclic thing because it induces people into the very experiences, which if they get into hospital, which is what they think they need, which is wrong, but there's what they believe in, they're the ones that they get treated terribly, and they've worked so hard to get there. That's what makes me want to cry.
Me too. If there's so much stigma attached to the label, wouldn't we be better off without it? A huge debate is raging about the future of the diagnosis. In the US, psychiatrists fell out over the categorisation of BPD in the new edition of the DSM manual. The row ended in stalemate. And, well, here's a newsflash. According to Peter Tyra, BPD is disappearing altogether from the International Classification of Diseases.
I'm chairing the ICD-11, which is the 11th revision of this classification, and we have an international working group, and we have abolished the diagnosis in the next classification. We haven't abolished it by saying people with borderline personality disorder don't exist. We're just saying it should not be classified in this way. And so we have reclassified personality abnormality on a very simple system, which is on a dimension, a continuum between people who have normal personality through to people who have severe personality disorder.
Does that mean sort of on a personal level, when I go to the GP and I see their computer screen, it always says borderline personality disorder on it, even though, you know, I like to think
I don't really fit those categories anymore. You know, I'm certainly in a much better place than I was 20 years ago, but it's still there. Does that mean when it's gone from the ICD, it will disappear from that computer screen?
Well, it should do, because one of the things that we want to make clear, and it's very important in treatment and in the course of illness, that people can progress from severe personality disorder down to nothing at all.
The psychologist Lucy Johnston goes even further.
It is more than possible for people to be genuinely helped to recover without any use of diagnosis whatsoever. Clinical psychologists like myself have been working in this way for decades. I never use a diagnostic framework. You don't actually need diagnosis to work productively with people, and in fact it gets in the way.
But the idea of abolishing the diagnosis does not appeal to John Gunderson or to self-help author Randy Kreger.
Making radical changes in the classification system for disorders where we have a great deal of knowledge about they're running in families, and we can talk to patients and families about what the expected course is, and we have treatments which are specific and effective. You don't want to mess with those kinds of diagnostic definitions very much.
I think that what the people say is to people who don't really believe there's such a thing as BPD is live with my relative for a couple of weeks and you'll see what it's like.
I started this program on a quest to discover more about the label I was given all those years ago. It's been an interesting, revealing, and sometimes uncomfortable process. What struck me most is that of all the experts I've spoken to, nobody seems to agree with anyone else. At times, I felt as though my personality was a battleground, a small patch of land that everyone wants to lay claim to. And I suppose this is the bit where I award the victory, come down on one side or another. But you know what? I'm not going to. The truth is, I don't know if my personality is disordered. And if it was, how would I? I don't even know if it's a useful way to look at things, but I'm sure this battle is going to go on and on. What I do know about my personality is, it's mine.
And you're still just across the borderline.
On the Borderline was presented by Claire Allen and produced by Leela Padmanabhan. For details of organisations that offer advice and support, go online to bbc.co.uk/actionline or call the Radio 4 Action Line to hear recorded information on 0800 044 044. Lines are open 24 hours and are free from a landline. Mobile operators may charge.